Thank you, Domiti. This is Sean Williams, and happy Saturday to you. Not as pretty a Saturday morning as we've been seeing lately in Chicago, but I'll take this. It's not raining right now, and we hope you have a really nice weekend. Joe Brand is going to call a baseball game for the Kane County Cougars today. I noticed, Joe, you mentioned that long semifinal match at Wimbledon. Was that the longest match ever then?
I'm not quite sure. It went 65 games, though.
Well, okay, here's what I know, because it's ironic, because it involves that Isner guy. John Isner, I think, is his name. Yeah, John Isner, the American. So I looked up longest match in history, because I remember this, because they were talking about how long this match was with Isner in this Wimbledon. Isner, by the way, is a former NCAA champion in tennis. He is 6'10" tall. You think that gives you a little advantage serving over the net? 6'10", this
guy.
Just
the arm span, too, to the left and right, too. I mean,
yeah, think how far
his
reaches, and some of us have trouble getting the ball over the net, but if you're way up there, think of where the ball is impacting the racket. It's 6'10". It's like at the top of a rim of a basketball. It's probably above a basketball rim. It's way up there, as you may know. He shoots it down.
Yeah, it looks like, well, 3 days it took that match.
Okay, so let me read this little thing I found. The Isner-Mahut match at the 2010 Wimbledon Championship, at least was the longest tennis match in history, was a first-round men's singles match in which the American 23rd seed John Isner played French qualifier Nicolas Mahut. The match began at 6:13 on a Tuesday, June 22nd. At 9:07, due to fading light, play was suspended. They resumed the next day, Wednesday, June 23rd. The record for the longest match was broken at 5:45 that day, but the light started to fade, and so at 9:09 on the second day, with the final set tied at 59 games all, play resumed at 3:40 the next day, Thursday, the 24th of June, and Isner won at 4:47 p.m. The final set lasted 8 hours and 11 minutes. In total, the match took 11 hours and 5 minutes of play over 3 days. So the final score was Isner winning 6-4, 3-6, 6-7, 7-6, 70-68. For a total of 183 games. It remains by far the longest match in tennis history, measured by both time and number of games. The final set alone was longer than the previous longest match ever. If you know a little bit about tennis, you know that's a lot. And I think it's interesting today, especially since with the World Cup going on, and this might be a question for you guys on the Vibe Score segment at the end of the show today. What's the better way to end a championship or a game? Do what they do in soccer, and in hockey for that matter, but let's say soccer, you had that shootout where after extra time and then what is the next overtime, and then they just say, okay, we're just going to stand there and kick the ball in the goal.
Right.
Or, nope, you're going to play until we have, if it takes you 3 days, we're going to stay here until we have a legitimate regular play winner. And that's what tennis does.
Well, I don't want to give away too much about what I want to say in the Vibe Score, but the difference is tennis is an individual sport, so you're already playing one-on-one. The whole thing about soccer going to the shootout goal, you're taking a team sport and bringing it into an individual effort. That's why a lot of people get frustrated with shootouts in hockey as well.
I don't think the soccer fans would mind. They're all crazy anyway. They'll stay there. They'll stay there.
Oh, yeah. They would stay there for 3 days, just like... If the tennis match would last 3 days, soccer fans would totally do that.
You know, Lou Manfredini was talking about birth order on his show, and he and I just talked about that briefly. Lou said at the beginning of his show, I don't know if you were listening around 7 o'clock this morning, here on WGN Radio, but he said that of the original group of Mercury and Apollo astronauts, all of them were, let's see if I get this right now, Lou, firstborn. Or only children. Most of them were only children. And of those who weren't, it was just a few, they were firstborn. There's something about being that one child that leads to confidence and competence. Think about that. Griffin found this. And this is a story from Newsweek last year. A justice who was first or the only child is more likely than other justices, judges, to hold conservative political views. And is less willing to strike down legislation. If you're so when you're picking your judges, if you are unfortunately going to trial, and you need a break here, you do not want a judge who was the first or only child. The reverse is true of justices who are middle or younger children. Those judges tend to hold liberal political views and more readily invoke judicial review. Huh. Firstborn children tend to conform to expected norms of behavior because when they do, as little kids, they win the approval of their parents. That socialization results in a pattern in which, as adults, they conscientiously respect authority and they attach importance to established rules. Latter-born children are the opposite, right? They want to get some attention. Hey, 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 I'm over here. I'm breaking dishes. I'm banging pots. I'm running away. And so when those kids, the middle and latter-born kids, become adults, they're less interested in the status quo. So depending on, I don't know, if you're guilty or innocent, if you need a break from the judge, say, oh, by the way, Judge, got any brothers? Any siblings? I want to catch you up on a story that we talked about last week. After the 10:30 news with Doma T., we'll visit with an audiologist who's going to talk to us about the impact of those hearing buds, those buds that everybody is wearing, like hearing aids. They're not hearing aids, they're buds. So that when you're on the train or when you're going about, you see people walking across the street, they've got those buds in, and everybody's jamming music or podcasts into their skulls. The question is, what is the long-term damage that is or is not doing to kids, middle-aged people, older people? Everybody's pounding music into their skull. Is that good or bad for you? Is it indifferent? We'll get you some answers to that question in just a little bit. I said... Okay, so the story we talked about last week. Griffin was not on page with this, and I don't think Joe was either. And Doma T came to my side, mostly because I think Doma T's a nice guy. But it was the story of the love connection between the strangers on the airplane. Have you guys followed up on this? Do you know what the part two of this story is, Griffin?
I have not seen the sequel.
Yes. Yeah.
Rosie Blair is the name of the lady who, you know, switched seats with somebody so she could sit next to her boyfriend. And then on the flight in front of her, she started to tweet out this budding romance between the two people that were now randomly put in front of her. So you got two people behind, two people in front. The people behind were sending out in real time this love connection between strangers who were sitting in front of her on the airplane. Now, I'm reading from Business Insider, for the first time, the woman involved in that, the woman whose romance was being documented unbeknownst to her, has broken her silence, and she says that being an unwitting part of this social media phenomenon has had serious consequences for her in the real world, and she is not happy about it. So where I said, isn't that kind of cool that everybody was following in real time this flirtation between this man and woman on the airplane, unbeknownst to the man and woman on the airplane? I thought it was darling and cheeky. You guys thought it was creepy and maybe too invasive. The jury now says it was creepy and too invasive. Griffin, your witness.
Yeah. What more can I say? I was proven right. I feel great. There's a lot of people I want to thank. everyone that I've, who's in privacy, I didn't invade on planes that I was on. You taught me something about not doing this. No, I don't know. The first time I saw it, we talked about this, but I was scrolling through, it happens. So you like start scrolling, yeah, and then you're done 60 seconds later and you're like, oh, that was funny. And I kind of felt that way. I didn't immediately think, oh, this is very weird. But then it kind of started to seep in the more you think about it.
That thing blew up. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people were watching it and commenting on it and sharing it and liking it.
That's the thing. And everyone's going after the poster, and I think to some extent that's deserved. Like, maybe don't do this. But she didn't know how big it was going to get also.
We were on our own on this one, John, because I didn't think... I thought about the privacy thing, but I didn't think anyone would recognize this woman in the video. But she says that people saw her on the street and really started to bring this whole thing up.
That's the thing. I think if it had stayed at the level that the woman who posted it expected it to.
Yeah, anonymous.
If it,
she blacked out their faces. She never revealed their names.
If it hadn't gotten so big, blocking out the faces would have sufficed.
And
but
I thought,
once it reaches, you know, the number of people that it did, that's it, people will find out.
And Griffin, in my defense as witness, I mean, my client's defense, I should say.
Well, thank you.
I mean, she did all of the precautions, more precautions than you normally see when people post things on social media.
True
like
that.
She yep. blocked out the fake, didn't yep. say the name. Normally, when I see people post little cheeky things about folks, they usually just show the person, assuming that their 100 followers won't make it go viral. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's totally true. And also, you might. You're now seeing, when you presented this story last week, you really thought, I think I was the first person to say to you, this might be weird.
Yeah.
Because you thought, oh, here's a fun, happy story to take us away from everything else.
What could go wrong? What could go
That's right, Joe.
But I will say that I don't think that it's all curdled for everybody. Like, I think this might be more 50-50. Still,
really?
Like, yeah. There's a lot of people who are like, come on, what's the big deal?
Well, because you know why, Griffin? I think I take into account maybe more than I should the intent. I mean, my own best intentions have sometimes gone astray, and I just think this person really thought they were doing something harmless and fun, harmless and good, and obviously the person that maybe whose opinion matters the most is the woman in front of her or the guy in front of her.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that the guy ran with it and put it in his Twitter bio and is, like, trying to be a model.
Oh, the other guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like your success rate is 50-50.
It was 50-50. Okay, so here's the statement from the woman who was revealed to be the woman in that flirtation. Quote, and she's not married as far as we understand. It was just that she didn't like being thrown out there when she had no control over it. She wrote, I am a young professional woman. On July 2nd, I took a commercial flight from New York to Dallas. Without my knowledge or consent, other passengers photographed me and recorded my conversation with my seatmate. They posted images and recordings to social media. Why are you laughing?
When you hear it presented just as fact, like the facts of the situation, you're like, oh my gosh, this is insane. Who would do that?
Your Honor.
She's not saying anything that's untrue. Keep going, sorry.
They posted images and recordings to social media and speculated unfairly about my private conduct. Since then, my personal information has been widely distributed online. Strangers publicly discussed my private life based on patently false information. I have been doxxed, shamed, insulted, and harassed. Voyeurs have come looking for me online and in the real world. Okay, that is creepy. I did not ask for and do not seek attention. Please continue to respect my privacy and my desire to remain anonymous. That is where that story ends. I want to read to you guys a review of a restaurant in Chicago. The question is this a place that we should go or not? The review is actually from Yelp, and it's a bunch of reviews. And Griffin, you guys talked about this on the business segment after our show a little bit last week. What are we to make of reviews on places like Yelp, social media places where you say, okay, here's what I thought of the dry cleaner. Here's what I thought of the garage. Here's what I thought of the restaurant. Let me read you the reviews from a local restaurant. Tell me if you want to go there or not. Here's play-by-play voice of the King County Cougars, Joe Brand, to explain to us what it means when they say it's time to rake. What does rake mean in baseball parlance, Joe?
Raking essentially means just a successful voyage for your team, whether it's pitching, hitting, just doing well. It's kind of a one-verb usage to just say being successful.
Okay. First time I heard that used. Oh, I wasn't exactly sure. Dave Kaplan on this radio station one time described a player. He said, that guy can rake. And I thought, what? And he meant he can really hit well. Would that be an appropriate use of that?
That would be. That would be the proper way to use it in a sentence.
Would you say somebody who pitches well, would you say, boy, that pitcher can rake?
I have in the past. I don't think I'm wrong for using it for both ends of the sports. I'm pretty sure you can say it with both.
Rake. The grounds crew rakes. I always wanted to be one of the guys that rakes in the seventh inning.
Do you know what a wake and rake is?
No.
It's when you have a very early start to a ball game. A lot of times like a
wake
morning game.
Wake and rake. Oh, I
wake
see.
Wake and rake.
Wake and rake. So I was looking at a restaurant that a friend said, hey, we should go to eat at. And so I went, and I won't even mention the restaurant here, but give me your thoughts on this, because I thought, okay, well, and so then actually, I don't know, I'm just clicking around, looking at the menu, and the next thing you know, I'm on to a place called Menu Pages, I think is what it's called. And there you see the menu of, and then a bunch of Yelp-like reviews underneath. I thought, oh, this is good. So then I started to think, well, I wonder who wrote these reviews. For instance, the first one says, awesome, exclamation point. And I thought, I wonder if that's a real customer or if that's the restaurant just posting that. In fact, the next one says, oh my God, I don't think I've ever had food this good. From the seafood tower to the thick, juicy, and perfectly cooked bone and ribeye steak, everything was awesome. I will definitely be back. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a great review. I should go there. And then I thought, no, you idiot, you shouldn't go there. That was written by the manager of the restaurant. Who among us says, from the seafood tower to the thick, juicy, perfectly cooked bone and ribeye steaks? I mean, that sounds like something that would be in the commercial. So, too bad for them if it was written by an authentic customer, but now I've discounted that one, and I'm suspicious. And that's so unfair to the restaurant. The next one says, my husband's ribeye was tough. They didn't do anything about it. And then I thought, okay, well,
that one's real.
Okay.
I like that one. That's real.
Or is it a competing restaurant?
Thank you, Joe. Besides, I thought, I don't even like this person. I mean, if your husband's ribeye is tough, really? Was it that tough? It's a $50 steak. I'll bet it wasn't that tough. I'll bet you're fussy. I'll bet you guys are never happy.
What are you doing reading reviews? Just to question every single one of them.
The next one says, I ate here on August 29th, and the ambiance was nice. The food was good, but really overpriced. The quality of the food could have been better to make my experience outstanding. And the bathroom was upstairs. That was odd. Now, that one to me sounds, I like that kind of little anecdotal observation. But, you know, the next one says, brought friends in from Australia, and all of us thoroughly enjoyed our meals. Great service. Wish there was a little more light, though. Okay, that's helpful.
It's truly a useless website.
What do you mean it's truly useless? I'm trying to figure out if I should spend $50 on a steak.
If you like anecdotally went out into the world and talked to 50 people who went to the same restaurant, they all had different experiences.
Well, don't you think I mean, a good restaurant will generally get good reviews?
I guess so, but I just think the prominence that the bad ones get, you just can't. It's just what you're saying. You can't trust any of them. You just never know.
And is somebody not going to go to the restaurant because of the lighting?
If the four of us are going out, and we're going Dutch, by the way, but if the four of us are going out, the bill is probably going to be $600. $500. I bet the bill for the four of us would be $500.
What restaurant is this?
It's a fancy steak place.
Yo.
But I mean, we're going to have a cocktail. We're going to have some wine. We're going to have coffee and pie.
For that much, I do not want to walk upstairs for the bathroom.
Oh, really, Griff? So the reviews matter, huh?
Or not be well lit.
Oh, but really, but I think that's part of the experience. Just one more. Way too loud, way too dark. Now, two people have commented on the lighting. Service good, but not great considering the price. The food was good, not great considering the price. Restrooms, difficult to find. Even the valet was expensive. The music was intrusive and couldn't get away from it. Even in the dining area. Okay. So what is the point of all of this? I do want you to text, which is kind of the same process, but I'm interested in how you've used in the past restaurant reviews. Do you use them? Have you commented? Have you ever fudged? Or have you ever promoted a place because you're a booster? I wonder what that is like. Let's look behind the curtain. Dominator, you said you were a little worried about this next segment. We're going to talk about what happens when everybody spends a life walking around, driving around, living around with buds in their ears, listening to music and podcasts. Are you one of those people?
I'm recording news with buds in my ears right now.
Joe Brand, you spend a lot of time with buds in your ears?
I have the surrounding soundproof headphones, but yes.
I don't know that that gets you out of jail on this, though. I mean, listen, Steve Bertrand and I have a little hearing loss because we've spent years in the business with cans on our head listening to conversation pounding away in our skulls. And we do it more than just the time we are on the air. We also are in production, and a lot of us have just spent a career pushing sound into our heads. And so I've always thought that was sort of a problem for people in my industry. But then you walk around and you go, wait, everybody is like a broadcaster now. Everybody's got something on the side of their skull and it's pushing sound in. And I think that can't be good. Because it ain't been good for those of us in this business.
And let me tell you how bad it is really quick, John. I've got an AirPod usually in my right ear, and I've got my cans, my over-ear headphones, on my left ear. So I'm chopping audio in one, listening to Miles Davis in the other. That cannot be healthy.
What the heck?
I'm telling you, it's how I keep my sanity.
And you're a young man. So here is Ariel Fruent. She is a clinical audiologist and faculty member at Northwestern University's Center for Audiology, Speech, Language, and Learning. Doctor, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me today.
You know, I saw an article in Time magazine. So my wife and I have had conversations like the gang is having right now. And I saw this from a recent issue of Time. 48 million Americans have problems hearing, and 20% of children now have permanent hearing loss, probably caused by loud noise exposure, which is maybe different than what we're talking about. The article said, considering how many people walk around sporting phone-connected earbuds, it's natural to wonder if those devices are contributing to widespread hearing loss issues, especially down the road. What's your answer to that generally?
So my answer is that we are definitely concerned about that exposure and the long-term risk of listening to music or podcasts or anything at an elevated volume.
At an elevated volume. Mm-hmm. What if the volume in the device I have in my ear is not elevated? Is it the location next to the head, or is it the volume that worries you?
So both of them are important. So the earbuds are closer to the eardrum, so that is delivering a higher sound pressure level right at the eardrum. But also the volume is really important. So we don't want to exceed unsafe levels for an extended period of time.
In this article, they quoted some people at Harvard, and they said they don't see any evidence that we have more hearing loss than previous generations. Do you concur with that? Is it too soon to tell? What do you think?
So I'd say it might be too soon to tell. I have seen one person in the clinic where I could attribute their hearing loss to extended exposure with headphones. And in this particular case, it was a young man who was in his early 20s, and he worked as a janitor. So to overcome the noise of all of the heavy equipment that he was using, he was listening to headphones at an extremely loud volume for 4 to 5 hours every night.
So that's ironic, because trying to mask the sound has actually damaged his hearing.
Exactly.
Well, all right, so he's 25 years old, but I'm thinking about the 25-year-olds who don't have hearing loss now, but when they're 45 or 50, they're going to be just like us broadcasters. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, so research is showing that we can see damage years, even decades later. And what's dangerous about this is it doesn't show up on any of the clinical tests that we use frequently, so we might not even be able to detect it at this point.
Well, plus, it's not like just listening for the year 2018 damaged your hearing, but it's 2018, 2019, 2020. It's going to be a life of wearing these things.
Exactly. So it's cumulative exposure over the course of a lifetime.
Does the kind of device you're using, does an earbud matter more so than something that wraps around the ears, you know, more of a muff on the side?
So either one could be potentially dangerous. So we get concerned if the level exceeds 85 decibels. And as the decibel level increases by 3 dB, we cut the exposure time in half. So we wouldn't want to be around 88 decibels for more than 4 hours, 91 decibels for more than 2 hours. And we continue increasing like that.
You got any measuring sticks for me to know what 85 decibels sounds like?
So great question. We actually are doing some experiments with that at our Northwestern Recreation Center. One of our professors has developed the Siegel Acoustic Mannequin, and we're talking to people who are coming through the gym, and we're measuring how loud their earbuds are, so we can tell them if they're listening at unsafe levels.
What are you finding?
So far we're finding that some people are. Now, again, it does also depend on how long they're listening for. So hopefully these people aren't at the gym for 8 hours a day, but they might be.
Would you say, all right, so suppose I was going to plan my day, my exposure to sound on these buds or muffs or whatever I'm wearing. I can listen to it loud as long as I plan on listening to it for a shorter period of time. Would that be the same as listening to it for a longer period of time, but with the volume down a little bit?
Exactly. So we do calculate the dose of noise exposure over 24-hour intervals.
Think about that. Like a dose. Like how much did you consume? And so if you want to crank it up, good, but just promise me that you're not going to listen to it too long.
Exactly.
Would be the advice you would tell parents to give the kids.
Exactly.
But to be clear then, but it just seems to me like when you put an earbud, it's like setting that listening device so much closer to your eardrum or whatever those little bones are in there, I'll bet you know what they are, that it would be more damaging to a person, no?
So it can be, because again, it is the sound pressure level, and it's going to be much higher the closer that earbud is sitting to the eardrum. Now, you can still listen safely with earbuds as long as you're keeping the volume in check.
If you got a question, 312-981-7200. Jump in here right now. Our guest is with us for 5, 6, 7, 8 more minutes. But if you have a question or comment about this, 312-981-7200. So,
can I get in on this? I'm genuinely concerned. So, are there any apps or resources to even know what the appropriate volume is?
That would be good. There should be an app or some sort of meter, right?
Yes.
Domitia, is that what you're thinking?
Yes, yes. Or maybe if you have an iPhone, it's kind of standardized. It's like halfway, 50%. Is that usually safe for an hour of listening? Or yeah, how can we figure it out?
Plus, if your hearing is damaged, you're the last person to judge the volume level to begin with.
I'm like, yeah, it's low. it's good.
It's sort of like asking a drunk if they've had too much to drink. They don't know they're drunk. So what do you say about all this?
Yeah, so I say there are great resources available in your smartphone. So personally, in my iPhone, I've set the sound limit under volume control in the music settings to 50%, so that I can't actually exceed an unsafe level.
Wait a minute, 50%. So I have a volume bar on my iPhone when I'm listening to music, left to right.
Mm-hmm.
You put it at 50, you put it in the middle?
I do put it at 50%.
Domitia's not going to like it.
You can't listen to Jay-Z at 50%.
No, but really, I mean, that is a precaution that people like Domitia are going to have to take, right?
Exactly. And a recommendation I have is to set the volume limit when you're in a quiet environment and you're able to maintain a conversation with someone from a close distance, maybe 3 feet. So you're listening to your music, but you can still hear somebody talking to you.
Say that again. Say that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a way that you can set the volume control is if you are in a quiet environment, you want to set it where you're still able to maintain a conversation with somebody at a close distance to you.
Okay, everybody just think about what she said for a minute. Because the experience is, if someone's wearing buds and you come up to them, they take them out to hear you, right? Because they can't hear you because they've got the buds in. You're saying they should be able to do both.
That's correct.
I mean, it's counterintuitive because I've got them in because I'm trying to tune people out.
Right. So there are some noise isolating headphones that you can get, and then that would tune out other environmental sounds.
To that point, guys, I want to bring in Don, one of our listeners. You're on WGN. Don, you had a question about sound canceling headphones, right?
Hi, King John. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Not the sound-canceling ones, like not the Bose ones, but 3M now has the earmuffs, like you can buy at Ace Hardware at True Value, that are designed to block out the heavy equipment noise. They have the noise reduction rating. And then they've got like a radio or a Bluetooth built into them. What's your opinion on those?
So I think those are great. So again, as long as you have the level where it's comfortable for you, if they are blocking out the surrounding sound, you're more likely listening at a safe level.
Technically, that works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's such a thing as noise cancellation or whatever that is.
Yeah, so those, they sound to me like they're isolating the noise in your environment. And a tendency that everyone has is that they will turn up the volume to overcome all of the sounds in their environment. So I do recommend the noise isolating headphones.
But it seems to me like I did have one of those Bose sets, and it did have a sort of little white noise that it would put through there. Do you know? Am I making any sense?
Yeah, that sounds like an active noise canceling system.
What do you think of that?
So that works as well.
I thought it was just marketing, but you actually, from a professional standpoint, think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, some of those are very effective.
Don, thanks for the call. I'm going to go from you to Jim. You're on WGN. Hey, Jim, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Good.
I've got a son that's got a vehicle, and he's got what they call a subwoofer in the car. And when you get in the car and ride with him, the bass on there is so loud it vibrates the car. It vibrates you. When you get out of the car, you're still vibrating. If the car's going down the street and it goes by you, you can hear this subwoofer. I don't know what. It's got to be doing damage, but I don't know because the tones are so low.
Damage to your son or damage to the car?
No, no, to you. You know.
My son had it, and it actually blew out the speaker in our car, something that he only told us about years later. Okay, so your comment on that.
That sounds like it's absolutely at a dangerous level. I would not recommend listening that loudly.
Sure you wouldn't, but if the average car ride is 27 minutes, or again, is it about exposure to that sound, right?
Yep, it's about the amount of time that he's exposed to it, right, as well as how loud it is. But something that's so loud where you're still feeling it, that could be potentially dangerous.
Jim, thanks for the call. Well, I read somewhere, maybe it was in that timepiece, Doctor, that if when you pull the buds out or take the headphones off, you feel or hear a ringing sound, what does that tell you?
Yeah, so that ringing or buzzing that you might hear is called tinnitus, and that could tell you that you've harmed your hearing.
Harmed your hearing.
Mm-hmm.
One more call. After Domati says this.
Well, so you talked about permanent hearing loss or permanent damage. Is there anything that you can do if you experience temporary hearing loss or you believe that your ears may be damaged? Can you salvage that some kind of way?
So you definitely want to get your hearing checked and establish a baseline measurement of how you're hearing and then take precautions in the future. So unfortunately, right now, there's not anything that you can do after an extended exposure where you are hearing that tinnitus or maybe your hearing seems muffled.
But you may hear tinnitus. I know what Domi's talking about, and I think I know what you're talking about. That may just be temporary, too, though, right? I mean,
right,
that just may be a natural reaction to loud exposure, and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. If you've been to a concert, it goes away,
mm-hmm,
right?
It does go away, but again, some research is showing that you could have done some permanent damage that might not show up on our clinical tests until years later.
Helen says, do earbuds cause infections?
So typically, they shouldn't. I mean, you want to make sure that you're keeping them in a clean place and in a case they're not in the bottom of your bag picking up any bacteria or germs otherwise.
Before I let you go, Ariel, anything else you want our listeners to know about as we all continue to go about our lives with buds and headphones on our heads?
Yeah, I would just say be aware of the sound in your environment and make sure that you are taking precautions and getting your hearing checked if you are experiencing any of the potential side effects of noise exposure.
That'd be a good thing for companies to do. Have somebody come in the same way they do blood donations and when you get your annual flu shot. It'd be nice if they came in as a courtesy to their employees and said, we're all going to get our hearing checked. Know what your baseline is.
Yep, exactly. And some companies are required to do that because of OSHA regulations. But I think you're right. That would be a great benefit for all employees.
Ariel Fruent is a clinical audiologist and faculty member at Northwestern University Center for Audiology, Speech, Language, and Learning, right? I'm going to call on you again, Doctor. Thanks for coming into our studio today.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
By the way, the doctor was showing me an app on her phone, and I'll talk about this after the news just so you'll maybe better have a chance to write this down. But she has on her phone an app that not only measures the volume. You walk into a restaurant or a bar or at a concert, and you go, I think this is really too loud. Just hit the app. It'll show you what the volume is. In fact, we were standing here, and it was 65, and then I said, hey, and it went to 89. Wouldn't it be nice to know what the volume is? And it calculates the dose of sound you get for a given period of time. So if, like Domati, we were saying, a little bit is okay, but don't overexpose yourself, well, this will it's almost like one of the, this is my reaction to it, you get your 10,000 steps a day. Well, how much audio did you consume today? This will help you manage that. What a good idea. Griff, where are we? Do we have anything I need to read right now? Yeah. I know that. I just don't need to read a commercial, right? Okay, so let's do this then. The news at the top of the hour. The app is called, you'll want to search at the App Store, NIOSH, Sound Level Meter. NIOSH, NIOSH, Sound Level Meter. I'll give you that information again after the 11 o'clock news. Also after the 11 o'clock news, the Mincing Rascals podcast, which is our broadcast of a podcast that we do. It talks news and it talks politics. But we don't want to talk too much politics. In fact, did you know that there is now a medication you can take if you feel like you are too stressed for having consumed too much politics? Joe, I want you to write this down too. Domati as well. But there's a disease called polytosis. And it's for people who've suffered from too much political conversation. And the medicine you take, and here's the commercial for it, is called Urelium Life 9000.
I was stressed all the time.
Today, more and more Americans suffer from politosis, and the midterms are 4 months away.
Every day I get up, go on Facebook, turn on the radio.
Symptoms of politosis include, but are not limited to, hallucinations, unexpected anger, loss of appetite, sneezing, wheezing, coughing, chest pain, and sometimes spontaneous human combustion.
I'd feel my chest tighten. I'd say, now look at this. To the dogs.
But now there's hope.
Now I take Urelium Life 9000.
Handcrafted by serious people in lab coats, Urelium Life 9000 calms, cools, and collects your thoughts when you start to talk politics. Take it as a liquid, gel cap, capsule, tablet, ready-to-wear patch, snortable powder, smokable oil, tonic, salty briquette, or suppository.
I like the suppository. So when someone says, hey, why don't you take your opinion?
Side effects include nausea and blurred vision, loss of hearing, and loss of consciousness. Actually, that's also how it works. It blocks your hearing and vision. You won't be able to hear or see a thing.
Now, I don't mind talking politics.
Don't take Urelium Life 9000 if you plan on operating heavy machinery. Talk to your doctor before using Urelium Life 9000 if you plan on getting pregnant, or if you plan on getting pregnant while operating heavy machinery.
My doctor says untreated, politosis could lead to debilitating Trumpitis or Bernie Sanderia. But not anymore.
For early onset politosis, ask your doctor about Urelium Life 9000.
Plus, it's gluten-free. I like that.
I do, too. That's Urelium Life 9000. More details about that later on. And again, that app that you may want to have on your phone that will help you gauge sound, the details on how you can get that after the news. Thank you, Doma T. This is Sean Williams. Thanks again to our previous guest, Ariel Fruent, the doctor at Northwestern, the audiologist. And a shout-out to her husband. Those of you that are Northwestern basketball fans remember the name Fruent not that long ago. He was sporting the purple for the Northwestern basketball team. And we appreciate their listening and her coming in because I thought that was just very helpful. We talked about wearing headphones and earbuds all the time, and how bad is that for us? And as she was leaving, Doma T, I put this app on my phone now. Brenda and I will sometimes walk into restaurants. We were at, Doc and Dutch's. We were at Doc and Dutch's, the new restaurant right in front of Wrigley Field at Addison and Clark yesterday. And everybody was there for the Jimmy Buffett concert. And when we walked in, it was really loud. And Brenda looked at me because she knows that's bothersome to me. I don't think anybody enjoys it when it's really loud, and it was. Well, if I had this app on my phone, I could have just tapped the button, and it would show me what the noise level is and how dangerous or injurious it might be to me. And I could have kept it on, and it would have recorded the dose of sound that I had consumed, and if I'm trying to minimize overexposure to too much loud noise, this would have been helpful.
Ergo, you have a baseline from which to look at how you're listening to your music moving forward.
In fact, as I speak to you now, it's 49, but then when I speak real loudly, it goes up to 91.9. And I think she was saying 85 was the safe level or a level that you should try and shoot for. Anyway, the app, and it's free, is just search at the App Store, NIOSH, sound level meter. Two options will come up. She and I picked the second of the two. National Institute of Occupational Safety Hearing, or something like that. National Institute Occupational Safety Hearing, NIOSH, sound level meter. I've got that on my phone now, and you may want to do that too. Okay, it's time for The Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio on Thursdays. We post it on Fridays and broadcast part of it here on Saturdays. The Mincing Rascals, by the way, are sponsored by Kelly Cruises. You want to cruise the Seine with me from Paris to Normandy on the 75th anniversary of D-Day? Go to kellycruises.com. On the podcast this week, we talked about that Forest Preserve incident with the woman with the Puerto Rican flag on her shirt, the president's Supreme Court choice, good TV, and more. But as always, we started with our introductions and the speed bump that is always Eric Zorn.
I'm Scott Stantis, a Toro cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I am Justin Kaufman, the co-host of the Steve Cochran Show, 6 to 10 here at 720 WGN, and also the host of the Download podcast.
I'm Eric Zorn, the self-made columnist from the Tribune. I appear Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in your newspaper.
Do you want to start the thing off with this sort of sidebar about the Jenner clan? Is that what you're doing there?
That's what I was doing. I was hijacking your podcast again, John.
Once again. Eric, will we be getting to, is it Kyrie? Who is the, not Kyrie.
Kylie.
She's on the cover of Fortune or Forbes magazine.
And the internet has gone crazy because...
A self-made millionaire.
Because they called her a self-made millionaire. She made the list, and she's going to be a self-made billionaire. But the question is, how can you be self-made when you're a Kardashian?
I think that's the same question in a way that applies to Donald Trump. I mean, is he a self-made billionaire? Because I think I could be a very successful millionaire if somebody gave me $1 million. Don't you think you'd do well?
He got more than $1 million. Didn't Donald Trump got more than $1 million?
I thought it was $6 million or $7 million. I mean, it's pocket change, really.
I guess it's the clarity on what self-made means.
Right.
I always thought it meant coming up from scratch. You know, the idea that you built this and you built your empire, and that's where you got your money.
It is a variation of the you didn't build this art debate that we had. That was in 2012. And, you know, my take on this is that, you know, I was born with two parents who loved me and loved each other, who instilled in me a love of reading and writing, who lived in a safe neighborhood, and sent me to good schools, and I'm a straight white male, and all those things are incredible advantages. And yeah, I've worked hard after that. I would never call myself self-made because of that, except in an introduction to a podcast.
It reminds me, do you know the movie? It was from the 80s, Inc., INC. Judge Reinhold's in it, and Eddie Albert has one of the best lines for me of all time. And he's flying over his compound. He's a defense contractor. He's flying over his compound, and he's saying, he's going, you know, when I came to this town, I only had $60 million in my pocket. Now look at me.
I thought you were going to quote Brewster's Millions. I thought that's where you were going, like the Richard Pryor movie.
Oh, no, I mean, just when you think I'm going to zigzag there, Jeff.
I mean, there are a number of people who take the sort of inheritance that maybe I had and turn it into billions, like a Bill Gates or something like that. But you know, in terms of, I mean, using the term self-made implies that you had nothing and you built it all up.
Can you separate self-made and self-made millionaire? Maybe that's the phrase everyone's getting caught up on. Can you be a self-made millionaire? Like John just said, like if you became a millionaire, Eric, then you were self-made.
Who says I'm not a millionaere?
Well,
you don't
newspaper money.
That newspaper money is really something.
Yeah. That you are erudite and intelligent and a columnist, maybe that comes from a place, and you don't entirely own that. Your parents gifted you with some of that, but that doesn't translate into becoming a millionaire. I know some people with the same skill set, and they are working for $40,000 a year or $23,000 a year, right? So if you are able to translate those skills into millions of dollars, I think you get to crow about it.
You can crow about it, but I think I object to the idea of self-made in this case. I think that everyone has to or should acknowledge who have inherited the kind of advantages that I bet everybody at this table has inherited in some fashion, that when you have those sort of advantages, you have to acknowledge that. You have to realize that, yeah, I mean, I made the most of what I was given, or I made a lot of what I was given, but I was given a lot to start with.
And this is all because of what Forbes called Kylie Jenner, which gets lost in the shuffle. This was a story of list of the richest women in the world. And this concept, Kylie Jenner, I don't think it's fair. It's this idea that because of this weird thing that Forbes put on her, a title that said self-made millionaire, she still should get credit for being a shrewd businesswoman who as a young woman, I mean, she has the ability to be the youngest billionaire of all time. Mark Zuckerberg right now is the youngest, or when he hit his billion off of Facebook. Kylie Jenner is due to surpass Mark Zuckerberg.
Can somebody tell me what she does?
Because she puts her name. She's a brand ambassador, so she puts her name. She's a business owner, just like Donald Trump or anybody else.
She caused the value of Twitter to drop several $100 million.
Not unlike Trump stakes or Trump real estate or Trump ties, long ties, whatever he's into.
But still, anybody with the last name of West, Trump, Kardashian, Jenner, we could make a list, does not get to describe themselves as self-made.
Well, Kanye West, I would say he's a self-made millionaire.
After Kanye. So Kanye.
Oh, yeah, so
kids,
your name is Chicago West.
Thank you very much, Justin. Thank you very much, Scott. Thank you very much, Steve. Okay, so that's one of the things we discussed out of the gates. We started on kind of a detour, but I thought the guys were onto something there. Eventually, though, we did get to talk about the woman with the Puerto Rican flag at the Forest Preserve, and that conversation went in a number of directions. We'll pick it up there in a minute. Here on WGN, we're listening to part of a podcast that we call The Mincing Rascals. If you don't already subscribe, it's free. I recommend that you do. The Mincing Rascals usually includes Eric Zorn and Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio and the Tribune, and then people like Kristen McQuarrie, who writes some of their editorials, Scott Stannis, their editorial cartoonist. Our own Justin Kaufman and Patty Vasquez chime in sometimes, too. Eventually, this week, we get around to the story of that woman with the Puerto Rican flag on her shirt at the Forest Preserve, and the Forest Preserve officer, and the man who confronted her. In fact, you'll see her on page one of the Tribune today, captured on video recently. We've also got the woman who didn't want some black kids in the pool she was swimming in, the guy who tore that Make America Great Again hat off of the kid, and the officer who didn't intervene. And the question the rascals were mincing on was, what should happen to these people?
I believe, as somebody who lives in this country, that ripping somebody's hat off and throwing a drink in their face at the Burger King or whatever is a offense. That's an assault. And it doesn't matter what hat, if you're wearing a White Sox or a Cubs or a MAGA or a Obama, whatever it is. That's against. And I don't think there's anything else that should be at play.
I don't think it's a federal case. I don't
it's
think
not a it's, federal case.
I don't think it's a quote-unquote federal case. I don't think it's a great big deal.
Maybe that's, we agree on that, yeah.
People have been taking the hats off of other people they don't like because they're a Cubs fan or a Sox fan, or I don't like your candidate, and they've been throwing sodas at each other, and you shouldn't do that. And it also doesn't mean that you need to be found and arrested and charged and lose your job. And I've got a litany of these things. The problem is I'll end up defending people who are telling black kids they can't swim in a swimming pool with the white people.
One answer is the rise of smartphones, that everybody, all four of us are carrying video cameras on our person right now. That wasn't true even 5 years ago. The other possibility is that we are a meaner, nastier, more vicious country than we were, and these things are happening more. That Donald Trump has unleashed some things in this population. Now, I happen to believe that. In a way, I see the signs going up around places, like, if you see an illegal immigrant, turn them in.
How provocative should the MAGA hat be? If I'm wearing it, what should I expect?
If we're going to go down that route, then anyone with the Green Bay Packers.
No, really, is a MAGA hat?
No, it's not. It's not an FU. No, I mean, there are people, there are thoughtful people who support Donald Trump. I think that anyone who thinks that this is an effective tactic, this doesn't just inflame the sense of grievance that Trump supporters have, is sadly mistaken. I mean, it's a terrible. I totally agree with Justin. It's a terrible thing to do, and it's a stupid thing to do.
Let me go back to sports. I mean, you see it all the time. Deadspin will have a ton of these stupid things. What happens when people are tailgating and it's a Packer Bear game and somebody walks by and they grab the hat and they start a fight, and it's always under the guise of the story is, what idiots. Look at the dumb idiots in the parking lot that have decided to make this game, this sport, personal. And I think it's just the same thing with politics to me. Why would you care? I don't care what Eric's hat is.
It's amazing to me when you see video of officers behaving badly, or a Forest Preserve officer not behaving at all, not doing anything at all. Everything is being videotaped. If you are going to do a stunt like rip a kid's hat off, or if you are going to act neutrally when somebody is harassing somebody and you're an officer and this could cost your job, it's amazing to me. People know what the consequences are. They're going to go viral. You have to behave correctly.
Isn't that the whole point of in the first place, though?
So why do we have video of cops still doing abusive things?
Before there were video cameras, things were happening that were not being documented.
But you know what? I did a column about a couple months ago. There was an incident down at the University of Chicago where there was a kid who was out with a metal bar smashing apartment windows and car windows, and it's a body cam of the police officer who comes up, and you watch what he does, and he confronts the guy, and then he backs off. He gives the guy space. He keeps telling him, drop it. He's backing up. He backs up at least 100 feet.
Who does? The
officer does. Finally, the kid with the bar charges at the officer, and then the officer shoots and takes him down. Doesn't kill him. Shoots and takes him down. Now, there was some outrage on campus. Like, the student is shot by a police officer. I wrote a column where I dissected that video And I said, this video vindicates this officer.
Right,
he did the right thing. And I believe that most police officers in most situations do the right thing, and that these cameras are helping them in that case. But I share John's question. Like, given that you know these cameras are on you and the people are holding cameras on you, why do you call someone a retard? Why do you chase after them and goad them into something and then arrest them? I mean, why would you do that?
You know who really showed some reserve recently was former EPA Director Scott Pruitt. And by the way, just a sidebar observation, the man who is nominating people for the Supreme Court thought Scott Pruitt was doing a great job. But there he was in a restaurant, and he's having a meal with a buddy, and a woman comes up to him and starts to give him grief. She was being civil about it, but right in his face while he's sitting there, and she's giving him about a minute of her mind. And Pruitt is just sitting there looking at it, and he looks at the camera, and he looks at her, and he knows he's had.
This is my son. He loves animals. He loves clean air.
You know, this is not going to be a conversation. You can't argue. You can't get up and leave. You can't say anything. You just have to take it, because anything you do could go wrong. And she's got the video. When Mitch McConnell was walking out of a restaurant and through the parking lot to his SUV with some pals he was having lunch with, same thing. A group of people confront him. They start to give him some politics, and he doesn't take the bait, and he can't.
Fuck you out!
What are you doing to this baby, son?
Yeah, we know where you live, too, Mitch. We know where you live.
He was smart not to engage because the video was going to
celebrities. Celebrities in L.A., like musicians and actors, they should teach politics.
I was watching TMZ for some unknown reason.
We watch it every day, Scott.
Okay, I'm hooked. I just love. I can't have enough Kardashian.
I turned on the TV and it was just on.
No, but what's her name? Reese Witherspoon was going to the store. I mean, yeah. How awful would that be? And some schmuck with a video camera jumps in her face. She's in sweats. She went to go get
asking her questions. Right?
Yeah, and she just smiles and gets in her car and drives away.
Reese Witherspoon should do an acting class, like $175 an hour for politicians.
Whenever I have friends and politicians who get in trouble, I always advise them, first thing in the morning, eat a big bowl of shut the hell up. Because you will not get in trouble if you don't say anything.
Yeah, no kidding. About the Supreme Court Justice nominee, Kavanaugh, I like the cut of his jib. I was charmed by his acceptance speech after the president introduced him to be a nominee.
Father John Ensler is here. 40 years ago, I was an altar boy for Father John. These days, I help him serve meals to the homeless at Catholic Charities. I have two spirited daughters, Margaret and Liza. Margaret loves sports, and she loves to read. Liza loves sports. And she loves to talk.
He's conservative, and I'm not going to like some of his views. But I want my Supreme Court justice to first be ethical and smart enough, and he seems to be those things. I worried about his attitude about impeachment. I'm just telling you, I'm a sucker for a good narrative, and he delivered one.
I think it's a totally appropriate nomination. It really is. And I'm like you. I like his narrative, but I also think he's the choice you're going to get when you have a conservative Republican in the Oval Office. This is the guy. I mean, you're not going to get anything else. What I thought was hilarious was the protest signs, and many of us on the right made fun of these signs that, you know, we oppose, you know, fill in the blank, because they didn't know who the nominee was. Yeah, come on. I mean, just
get... Well, but that's not the first... They're not the first people to play that game. Certainly the Republicans, they didn't even give Merrick Garland a hearing. And, you know, overlaying, I mean, I agree that the presentation that Kavanaugh gave the other night was charming. You know, he has pretty daughters and his pretty wife and his nice little backstory. I think his politics, I think he's an ideologue. He's a partisan. I mean, he's a former Republican.
He's a constructionist, or whatever you call those people that interpret the Constitution strictly.
Yeah.
Beyond that, he's more political than some of the judges have been in his involvement politics.
The pieces he's written about protecting the president. I don't know what the timeline of those are. Was he working for the White House at that time?
No, this was 2009 that he wrote the Law Review article where he
had just left.
Apologized for his role in the Ken Starr investigation, which he was one of the most rabid members of that investigation, trying to bring down Bill Clinton. And now suddenly he had a change of heart. He had it in 2009 when there was a Democratic president. So you can't say that was particularly partisan. He feels like the office of the presidency is too important to have that person be harassed by...
What's your attitude about that, Eric?
Well, I disagree with that. I don't think any person should be above the law. I think that's part of what America is.
Of course. Besides, hasn't Donald Trump demonstrated that... I understand we need to not distract or protect the office of the president for doing the work that the president has to do. But this is a president who, in the first 3 months, golfed more than his predecessor did in 8 years.
And he watches Fox News all day long.
It doesn't look like a full-time job to me.
I don't think he's that so busy that he couldn't sit down and answer some questions. I don't take the argument at all that this distracts him from doing the job that he should be doing.
Don't take to the bank my math on the golf there, but you get the idea. That's the Mincing Rascals podcast. You can hear it in its entirety wherever you subscribe to Swell Podcasts. We also post it to WGNRadio.com and on my Facebook page, where I am WGN King John. At WGN King John, we've also just posted that app that we were talking about that helps you discover how much sound you're listening to, and are you listening to a dangerous amount of sound? That's WGN King John on Facebook. Don Mattis got news coming up, kids. Everybody gets a roll on. I know shorty and she doesn't want no so-so. Had a man last year, life goes on. Haven't let a thing loose, girl, in so long. You been inside, know you like to lay low. I've been people what you bring to the table. Working hard, girl. Put your phone out, snapping like you Fable. And you showing off, but it's alright. And you showing off, but it's alright. It's a short life. What are we listening to here, Griff?
I think you know.
That's my boy Drake.
Is that your boy? Is Drake your boy?
Actually, I've never been able to speak the current vernacular, even when I was age appropriate. So that's an artist named Drake.
It is an artist named Drake, a Canadian artist named Drake. Yeah, that was Nice for What from Scorpion, his most recent album. That's the lead single. It's been out for a long time. It's a huge hit. I don't think we've ever done it on this segment, though.
No, we have not. I've never been more educated about a music segment conversation than I am on this one.
Well, and I'm playing it now because you, I guess, went in-depth on Drake. He had 7 songs in the top 10 last week, right?
Yeah, right.
Breaking the record.
By the Beatles for consecutive, for number of songs in the top 10 in the same week, simultaneously.
Right.
7. The Beatles had 5 in 1964. Drake this week put 7 in the top 10.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Got a billion streams in 1 week.
25 of the top 100 right now are Drake songs. Owns it.
There were roughly a billion songs on that album, though, so that's like, it's actually not that good. No, it was 25 songs.
I was going to say,
album, right?
Yeah. 27 songs.
Yeah, and that, I think, affects the...
I don't think it does. I mean, because you're right. If there's a billion songs or 10 songs, you're competing with all of the other songs by all of the other artists. So I think it's...
True, but it does increase your odds.
Well, this isn't the lottery. They're not ping pong balls. You either earn it or you don't.
No, but I think a big part of this conversation is, and I'm guessing you touched on this, I don't know, but it's the way that these charts are compiled has changed. Streams and YouTube views and stuff like that all contribute to Billboard numbers now. It's just different than it was.
I did not know that.
For the Beatles.
Well, I think, fair enough, Griff. I mean, that was a big part of the argument because I was playing Love Me Do or I Want to Hold Your Hand, 1964, number one songs, and they're so different than what Drake does. And we're still listening to the Beatles 60 years later. Will we be Drake? So people get very defensive when you criticize the music of their youth or when you denigrate it, when you diminish it. And so we're saying, okay, maybe the math, maybe the way we're counting the Drake listens or downloads isn't fair to compare to the way the Beatles were consumed, right? You had to go buy a record, put it on a turntable, or listen to it on the radio. There's so many other ways to hear music these days. Maybe it's easier for a Drake to get those kinds of numbers.
And I don't know what the argument to actually make is, but it's different. And I think it's more possible for somebody to flood the zone with a 25-song album. And if a small portion of those... And it's also like, those were all singles from the Beatles, right? For even to be eligible for a chart. Drake doesn't have to release these as singles. People just have to find them and enjoy them and not even pay for them, but just stream them over and over. It's just changing. It's
that's
just
a different. Good point, though, really. I mean, you can get them for free. I didn't pay for them. I've got them on my... I've got files of them. I listen to them on Spotify,
I'm not an expert on this stuff, but, and Drake is, like, at the height of his power even still. And this song is awesome. I'm not as crazy about the rest of the album, but I love Nice for What. I think it's one of his best songs.
There are three songs on there that I think are... that I've listened to over and over again. In fact, I did this week. Three for me is a lot.
Yeah, which ones?
Well, they're on that queue there. Now I got to remember the names of them all, Griff.
Domiti, what do you think about the song and the album?
Love Nice for What, because it samples my favorite artist of all time,
Lauryn
Hill.
That's right.
The album is meh, but I'm kind of meh on all Drake albums. I don't like when he sings. He's always flat. But this album with so many songs on it, he does... equal singing, equal rapping, and you know he's a good lyricist. He puts words together well. I give it a 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10.
So 60. So by the way, Griff, are we doing the song or the album?
Both. But yeah, what do you think of the song?
That song I give an 89. The album I give an 89. I liked it a lot.
Song is a 95 for me.
Wow! Wow!
An 80 on the song, a 60 on the album.
Joe.
I have yet to listen to the album, but judging by just the song, I'll give it an 80. I did enjoy it. I'm not too big of a Drake fan, but I do agree with Domiti. He does have a good way with words and his lyrics and everything, so I am able to appreciate his talent and some of the songs he puts together. But yeah, as far as the album, that's as far as I've listened so far.
You're not missing much. Speaking, not his heart. You're not feeling that there, are you, Joe?
No.
All right, Griff, you got anything else for us? Because I've got one for the gang.
Go.
Okay. You guys, what do you like better? Ending a sporting event with a sudden death shootout like they do in soccer or hockey? Or do you want it to just go on forever until we get a legitimate winner as they did at Wimbledon? Wimbledon, you could play, and they have 75 games in the final set. Longest one was 11 hours. We had one that approached that in this Wimbledon tournament. Should they play the same way you play all the games until you get a winner, or should you have some sort of sudden death shootout? Joe, go.
I'm totally fine with playing until somebody faints when it's something as high as the stakes as Wimbledon and
World Cup
are, the Stanley Cup final, those types of events. Regular season, you're talking just, you know, the general competition of the game during long seasons where these athletes are giving it their all. That's when it's okay to bring an individual competition, as in a shootout or something along those lines. But, I mean, when all the marbles are on the table, why not? Why not? Because, I mean, the adrenaline's still running for these athletes, and they just want to give it their all. Why not bring it down to the very last wire?
And if they start to tucker out, then one of the determining factors for who's best is who has the most stamina. I mean, that's exactly. Part of the game, too.
And how you're able to, you know, handle under the pressure. I was actually thinking about that when I was watching Nadal and Djokovic. I mean, there's a hard shot towards the other way, and Nadal just kind of gives up on it. And I wonder, oh, is that because he's lazy, or is he just trying to reserve some energy?
Yeah, well, you know? It's a strategy, because, yeah.
Exactly, and that's where that comes into play. And especially when you were talking about the match 8 years ago that went 3 days.
Yep.
I mean, think about the strategy that was involved there.
Okay, I'll lay off the second day, but the third day I'm going to bring it all.
Okay. You got to retain some of that energy, I guess.
So 100 is play it till you drop. Zero is sudden death. You are in a championship series, 100.
Yes, 100%.
I am 98.6. Domiti, where are you on this one, sir?
Well, everyone knows when Nadal and Djokovic did whatever Joe said, that it was worth 100. So that's my score.
That's our sports expert, Domiti Pongo.
Exactly.
Griffin, your thoughts, please.
And just following up on that. when the other thing happened, and then it happened, and then again, and then it was who even could say. So yes, absolutely, 100.
Joe Brandt, give us one, Joe.
I thought we were going with that one, but
is that yours? That's okay.
Yeah, you know what? I got another one.
All right.
Did you guys happen to see? I forget what school it was, but the athletic director had to step down. So they brought up one of the coaches to be the new athletic director.
Yeah.
The guy's name, Velvet Milkman.
We are rating the name Velvet Milkman.
100.
100. Oh, that's the greatest name of all time.
That's his birth name?
positive.
Right. Now, if he changed that as a coach because he thought that was going to help him in some way, that's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, no, his name was actually Tim Walsh, but he felt Velvet Milkman went a little bit better.
But he thought Velvet... You know, if your last name is Milkman, I say go with it. Come up with a crazy name for your kid because he's still going to... Life's going to be hard for him anyway. Give him something to work with. Velvet Milkman. Wow. I love that name, 100. Domiti, 100?
Easy.
Griffin?
Zero. No. No, it seems... I'm 85.
Fair enough.
I feel like if you do have Milkman to work with as a last name, you know, there's a lot of potential for puns, some kind of wordplay. Instead, they just went kind of just zagged in the other direction, just something else crazy.
Just go all in.
But I feel like maybe there's a better option out there, but I just don't know what it is.
Right, like they could have named the kid Ima, and then it'd be Ima Milkman or something like that, right? Or who's the, or I don't know, something like
it's
that.
Right. It's
I'm not suggesting that I have a better option.
Let's see if this changes things. Bob Kessler just told me Velvet Milkman is a woman, by the way.
Oh.
Does that change it at all?
Why did we assume it was a man?
I saw a picture.
Well, Milkman.
Is that true, Joe?
I saw a picture, but I think maybe it could have been the previous athletic director that was stepping down.
Got it.
All right, Joe. Thank you, sir. Domiti, you got anything for us?
The Forest Preserve officer quit. We've been talking about it on and off throughout the show, John. I've been waiting to hear your vibe score on this one. 100 is he should have been fired. 0, he should have been able to keep his job. Now, this is the Forest Preserve officer that did nothing while the woman with the Puerto Rican flag t-shirt was being harassed.
I've been an outlier on this one this week. I know he quit, but before he quit, I said he should keep his job but be punished. So if firing him is 100, you know, I would be on the other side of that. I'd be like a 45. I think what he did was terrible. I didn't think it should cost him his job. Where were you on that, Domi?
You got one job, protect people, and you didn't do it.
So out he goes.
Out he goes.
Joe, you want to chime in on this one?
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is kind of echo off what you said, John. Didn't they assign him to a desk duty right after that had happened?
They did that.
I mean, yes, you could do the extreme of firing him, but why not try to educate the situation and future circumstances of that nature? I do agree with Domiti, though. You have one job. You know what you sign up for when you work in law enforcement. But maybe just try to make some improvement out of the situation rather than just totally cut the guy off.
And what you say is very fair. Mia Irizarry, the one who was complaining, she said that she wished there was a public hearing. I guess she wanted some more closure after this just to create some type of learning for folks.
That was the deal. I mean, the guy quit before they were able to prosecute him at the case, although I'm not sure that we're not going to hear some sort of lawsuit come out of this story either. The music has ended. The segment has, too. All right, thanks, guys. Thanks, Griff. It's 11:52 on WGN. Hey, John, how are you?
Good, doing really well. I found that conversation about the, and I'm looking at the sound level meter you put next to me right now. It's 78, 80 now. I'm getting louder as we go. But that was fascinating.
We all wear earbuds.
Right.
And how much damage are we doing? And the doctor at the end said, you should just get a sound meter on your phone, and you can see what your cumulative exposure is, what the peak exposure is. I posted the information on the app that I have on my phone there now and how you can get it. It's free on my Facebook page, WGN King John.
I wish I had it last night when I was told at a bar on a Friday night. It was a packed bar over in the Southport area, a lot of Jimmy Buffett fans. You mentioned you were out in the same area, and I was having a conversation. It wasn't particularly loud, but it's a loud bar, so we all had to raise our voices, and two people that were sitting at the bar politely turned around and said, could you move your conversation 5 to 10 feet away? And then they proceeded to try and be friendly with us, but at the end they said yes, and if you could move 5 to 10 feet down the line, that'd be great for your conversation.
Wow.
It was one of the strangest things.
What did you do?
We moved down the line. He told us a story then about how his one of my friends was wearing a 97.9, one of those Loop FM shirts, because he was going to the Jimmy Buffett concert, and he tried to tell us, oh, I used to have 8 of those
Wait,
shirts.
Wait, so somebody going to the Jimmy Buffett
yes.
concert?
Yes. Yes. Told us to move 5 to 10 feet down the bar. Now, granted, I'm a loud person, but the bar was packed, so they were the two of the lucky ones that had a seat at the bar. The rest of us had gotten there later and were just kind of mingling behind. And then he had the audacity to try and strike up a conversation
right,
with us to make it better.
We're cool, right? We're friends. We're friends.
And then he said, oh, you know, I had a lot of those shirts before my German au pair threw 3 or 4 of them away, and I just...
This guy's work.
Yes, right. So I moved down the line and then moved on.
I was on the L yesterday going home, and I live near there, so the train was filled with Buffett people. And there was a young woman there, like maybe 25 years old. Well, she wasn't going to the Jimmy Buffett concert. Her grandparents were, right?
Right.
And so I saw her kind of surreptitious, because everybody around had lace, flower shirts, and there's two women sitting there with great big parrots mm-hmm. on their head. And she just kind of gets her cell phone out, and she's like taking pictures of all of these people.
The spectacle.
She's just like, oh, my God. And I know she's sending it to her friend Megan. Oh, my God, get me off this L right now. But that's what it was.
It's an interesting neighborhood to live in because, you know, I know the Cubs schedule pretty well. I knew they were out this weekend, but, you know, I started to see, I was in the neighborhood walking through, and I started seeing some Hawaiian shirts, and I thought, huh, something's going on there. What's going on? And then I saw two parrot heads, and that's when you know.
This isn't Maui. No. Maybe Jimmy Buffett's in town. I'm eating up your time. What are you going to do on your show?
Well, we are going to be talking about the AT&T and Time Warner merger. The government is appealing the decision by the trial judge to let that merger go through. It's making some real strange political bedfellows between people who support the president and Trump who don't want this merger to happen. Many Democrats don't want this merger to happen either. But it's a fascinating discussion, so we're going to dive into what's next with that. And then the Build-A-Bear thing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. The pay-your-age thing gone wrong.
How did they not see that that was going to go off the rails?
I don't know, but I take the stance that I didn't even know that Build-A-Bear was still around. So for me, it went wrong, sure, and they're trying to make it right with some vouchers. I still believe any press, for the most part, is good press. I had no idea they were around, and every TV station did a story on it.
That is true. All right, all of that and more after the news. The news is next.